everyone. I'm still Stephanie.
Hey, Stephanie.
I'm from Baltimore Radio. And we thought we would do the two questions first. Okay? You want me to read?
Okay. Yeah, bang
them out. Bang them out.
Charleston, bang them out. Bang them out. Okay. When you know you are not hungry and it's not time to eat, but food is calling you. So I'm not hungry, not time to eat, and food is calling, how do you deal with it? You want to take this one, or you want me to take this one? So is it in that type of a situation, is it similar to what someone asked a question, and it's a similar answer. So I would go to my higher power first and pray. Okay, because I was taught that's the first place to go. Not to my sponsors, not to a fellow. And then go find someone to help. Because I found that, you know, if I'm in my head, I'm not feeling okay, if I help someone else, I feel better. And I don't know if Charles would have a different.
Oh, got it.
All right. And then what would you say to a younger way who thinks they have time to get in tire accidents? What would you say to a young OA who thinks they have time to get abstinence? So, my first sponsee ever in this program was 17 years old. And she was probably over 300 pounds. She had quite a story. And there would be times where she would doubt, you know, how am I going to stay, you know, I'm only 17. How am I going to do this? How am I going to stay abstinent the rest of my life? And it was like, you know, one day at a time. And I would, you know, I would share my story. You know, I got here, I was in my late 30s. And I didn't stop eating, you know, cycles of relapse. I didn't stop eating until this last time, so almost 3 years ago. And I really believe that it's like Russian roulette. I never know if I'm going to come out of a relapse. Because it's gotten harder and harder and harder. And so I would just share my story and I would just share that. So, I don't know, Charles, you got something on that? I don't know if that answers the question, but I mean, that's how I would handle it. You know, we see a lot of young people come in, and we see a lot of people come in, and young people come in and leave and come back and leave, and, you know, I do think it's like worship or love. You never know. So, okay. Well, we still, we're not done. Originally, what we were going to do is we were going to finish the doctor's opinion, and I was going to tell my story. But I think I'll just take 15 minutes before we go back in. And 15 minutes to just quickly, I think I've told a lot of my story as I've been going through the reading. But for those of you who don't know me, I'll just get the numbers out of the way. I've been in LA for 14 years. I am a 100-pounder. I've lost to gain 100 pounds multiple times. My top weight is 245 pounds. And I didn't get here until dieting stopped working. I'm a professional dieter. I've been dieting my whole life. You know, I always tell people, now I'm dieting, I can never lose weight. I can lose the weight. So, you know, give put stuff in front of me, put the diet plan in front of me, show me what to do, and I'm going to throw my entire self into it. I'm going to be like the A student. I had a trainer who said I was like a, you know, I was like a trooper, you know, and whatever he said, you know, sergeant, I'd show up, okay, I'll do it exactly to the T. You know, I've got that perfectionism, and it's got to be just right. And so I would take it, I would lose the weight, and then as soon as I lost the weight and bought the new wardrobe, and I'm sure some of you can relate to that, I was off to the races again. Oh, yeah, I'll just have one bag of M&M's, you know, and then it's 5 pounds of M&M's. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on my food history because it's probably very similar to people in the room. I always had a problem with food. It was never like my family. I was never like my friends. I was the kind of, you know, I was always, I'd go to a friend's slumber party and everyone else would go to sleep and I'd be binging on the pizza, waiting for them to like go away. I always wanted more, it was never enough, and I never felt like I could fit in anywhere. I always felt different, I felt not enough, I always felt wrong, if that makes sense. Never felt okay. and always separated from everybody. And my solution was to compulsively overeat and read. I read in third grade, I was reading like Gone with the Wind and walking up these huge books, and I always was escaping into some other kind of reality. I didn't have a weight problem when I was a child because I was really active, but I was always told I did. Like my dad would pitch me, oh, they're getting chunky. Or I come from little Italian people from New York, like little short Italian people. Like, but my mom was 5'2". I'm 5'5", and I am a towering person. And I'm like looking down at my dad and everybody. And so I always felt big and, you know, never felt, even my daughters, my three daughters, the tallest one is 5'3". I still tower over everybody. So I always felt just off. So my solution to life was food. And I'm just going to fast forward because I really would rather spend more time on my relapse. Because this disease has taken me to such places that I never imagined that I would go to. I always separated myself from all of you. I called myself a high-functioning compulsive overeater. Today, I don't know what the hell that means, but I believe it. I was a single mom with three kids. I built a career. I supported my family. I was successful in every other aspect of my life, but I had this dirty little secret. I would go home at night. I'd put my kids to bed. I'd lay on the couch with all my food, turn the TV on, and binge myself to sleep every night. And God forbid one of those kids came downstairs and caught me, and it was like, oh, kids, what are you doing? Oh, my God. And then you're like, you know, run back upstairs. This poor little girl. You know, it was really borderline abusive the way I would scream at them if they caught me because it was my time. You know, I had a long day, I'm tired, I wanted my time. And I'd eat and I could breathe. And this is a progressive disease. And the older I've gotten, the less I can breathe. In the food, I can't breathe. I came to OA. I didn't get abstinent right away because I'm too smart for my own good. I bought all the books. In fact, it's funny because I married a compulsive overeater. We have three copies of everything. So if you ever need a book, don't buy it. Call me. We got married and all came together. It took me a while to stop eating. I finally got abstinent. I lost all the weight. I met the man of my dreams, you know. He had a year, I had 30 days. Sick and traffic, I don't know. We got married. 80 people out of 100 people at our wedding were from OA. So we had the big OA wedding, we had the big OA relationship. We were both at an immovable body weight. And life got big, and my head got big, and I got the job of my dreams. Finally, someone was recognizing that I am this person. It was like a bill. Finally, I had arrived. And I worked for a vegan fast casual restaurant company, and my CEO, my boss, one day, we're in a restaurant, he knew I didn't eat sugar, and he said to me, you need to taste this carrot cake. And I'm like, I can't, I don't eat sugar, I'm allergic to sugar. And he looked at me and he said, how can you do this job? How can you be a leader in this company and not eat it? And for a split second, my fear of what this man thought of me was more important than what I knew was going to happen or could possibly happen, right? Because I've been asking for a while, oh, it's a dog egg. It's organic cane juice. It's vegan. It's okay. You know? And I took that bite, and I didn't come out of that relapse for 3.5 years. In fact, the job that man hired me to do, I couldn't do. I left. So I got fired. I got another big job. It was their fault. And that's when it got really bad for me. And I think I talked about how my life had gotten real small. I was about to lose my job. My marriage was on the rocks. I wasn't talking to my kids. When I'm eating, food is my best friend, my lover, it's everything to me. And I kept thinking, this is my bottom, this is my bottom, this is my bottom. I got in a car accident, and the cookie, and I was trying to open the box of cookies, and my head's down here, and I hit off the curb, and I'm like, this is my bottom. It wasn't my bottom. I ate trash, or, food out of the trash can every single night. This is definitely my bottom. It wasn't my bottom. I'm failing at work. This is my bottom. It wasn't my bottom. I mean, I kept trying to control it, and you know, I can't control the disease, and you've probably heard this before, when the gorilla is done when the gorilla is done with me, okay? Because I have no control once I start. You know, on page 24 in the italicized paragraph, it says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice and drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without success against that first bite, or drink at that first bite. And that's what it's like for me. I would get 2 days or 3 days or a week. I feel better. And then the thought would come back. I can have this. I just have one. It'll be okay. It'll be different this time. I got it. It's okay. And then I would eat it. And I would be like, oh my God, here I go again. And then the negative thought, the battery in my head, all the negativity, came back. And, I had so many people ask me, I used to ask people, what are you doing? How are you doing it? Who's your sponsor? Show me what you did. And I wasn't done until I was done. And I wish I could say, do this, work in the vision for you every day, 5 days a week, and the Sunday special edition, which, by the way, is a good idea, but that's not going to get me abstinent if I'm not done. Or eat this food plan. I was vegan for a long time. I'm vegetarian today, and that's not going to stop me. But binge on vegan food, or binge on vegetarian food. Vegan cookies are the bomb. They are, I don't know. Hey, whoa. I don't have anything to say to you to tell you if you are struggling what to do other than surrender and do what it says in this book. I don't know what else to say. I said it earlier, when the pain of the food had to be a little bit worse than the pain of being abstinent. And in that moment, being out of ideas and not knowing what to do, something magically happened. I don't know how, I went from a despairing wreck, suicidal, wishing that to just, I didn't want to breathe the air because I couldn't stand eating like I was eating. And in that moment of really pushing the chips in and really saying, I don't know, something shifted inside of me that enabled me to put the food down, this power, enabled me to put the food down and walk the steps. And I threw myself into the depths with a sponsor. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. I looked at stuff I didn't want to look at. I made an amends to my ex-husband, who I swore I'd never make an amends to. I refused. I did more than such many times in this program. Every time we got to him, I said, no, I'm not doing it. And I knew that I had to make that amends, and I made that amends this time. And it didn't, he wasn't very nice about it, but I didn't do it for him. I did it for me, so I could stay connected. And I just want to just plug that. As we're looking at the doctor's opinion, talked about the place of change, talked about, the spiritual solution, and they say it, Bill says it so many different ways throughout the book. He's really good with wordsmithing, but it's as simple as, I need a power greater than me to remove the obsession, and I need to work the steps. And as I work the steps, that spiritual awakening happens slowly, steadily. It doesn't happen overnight, and I'm never done. I want to talk about 10, 11, 12, and then I'll finish up. because for so long I heard, and I was never willing to do a real 11th step. I was never willing to do a nightly review. I had a sponsor who said, oh, just send it to me if you feel like it, just do it. And so if someone tells me to do it if you feel like it, I'm not going to do it. Today, I call into my sponsor every single day. I haven't missed a day of reviewing my day in almost 3 years because if I can't plug into that power, if I can't connect to that power, I'm screwed. And all these resentments, my selfishness, my dishonesty, delusional thinking, the crap that happens throughout the day, if I'm not clearing that mess on a daily basis, it builds up again. And it builds up. And it builds up. And every time I do this, it's like building a wall, right, between my higher powers on this side and I'm on this side. And every time I refuse to look at this stuff, a brick is in place. The brick, another brick is added. And every time I'm willing to do this work, that brick comes down. And it wasn't like, I love you, God. It wasn't like that at all. It has been slow and steady. I didn't even know what my higher power was this time. I was like, I don't know, but I need whatever you are, whoever you are. And every day that I stay absent to this work, something shifts and something changes. And I am so imperfect. You know, I'm so under construction. My husband will tell you how imperfect I am. Because every day I'm selfish. Every day I'm dishonest. Every day. There's rarely a day that I don't have a fear. Or do something, you know, or a thought. But if I look at it at the end of the day and pray for it to be removed, if I step on someone's toes and I'm willing to fix it, things continue to get better. And so I just want to say this, I left that big job well before I got fired. And I decided everything needed to change in my life. And I decided to go back to school, you know, at my age, you know. And I decided to go back to school. I decided I want to help people. I want to work with kids. I want to be a therapist. And I remember I was so scared to register for school. Oh my God, what's this going to be like? I'm too old. I can't learn. Am I too old to learn? How can I do this? Just register. And trust. Okay. So what do you want me to do? Okay. Register. Okay. First day of school. Oh my God, oh my God. What are people going to think of me? No one's going to like me. I'm so old. I don't even know if I can learn. What am I going to do? Show up. Walk in the door. And I showed up. I walked in the door. I was like, oh, okay. This is okay. I recently transferred to Cal State Fullerton and finished my general life class at the big university. Oh my God. Can I do this? Is it going to be harder? Oh my God. Show up. Now, so I just continue to suit up and show up and trust. You know, I just did these midterms. Oh my God, I'm going to fail my midterms. Oh my God. Why don't you study? Okay. So I study. Okay, God, the rest is. I want to be on everything. I want to be the smartest kid in the class. The results are up to me. None of my friends is just show up and do the work. My daughter had a baby almost 14 months ago. She's a meth addict. She's in recovery today, but she wasn't. And we have a baby. All of a sudden, we've got our grandson living with us. He was 4 months old. Oh my God, oh my God, what am I going to do? I'm not going to school. I'm taking statistics. How am I going to have a baby? Show up. Okay. And it's okay. So, if you're struggling, if you're new, if you feel like this isn't going to work for you, if I'm standing here telling you I'm recovered for almost 3 years and I'm doing life by the grace of my higher power, anybody can recover. And I didn't think I could. I sat in the room and I listened to people like, they're liars. You know? They don't have it like I have it. If I'm here standing here before you today, and you want to recover, this program is amazing. My life is amazing today. Fought with me still. for forgiveness and all. But I was blessed by it. So thank you for your time.
Oh
my God. Okay. Where was that? Where are we in the book? Who remembers?
Women writing.
I think it works with me. Okay. We're on page XXX in the document. Because the classification of alcohol seems most difficult and in much detail is outside the scope of this book. There are, of course, the psychopaths, so I thought I was, who are emotionally unstable. We are all familiar with the type. They're always going on the wagon for peace. Who here is always going on the wagon for peace? Me too. They are over-remorseful and make many resolutions, but never a decision. And I was in Harlan's Big Book Boot Camp not too long ago, and what he said about that is never making a decision is really about step three. I just keep rolling back, you know, through step one and two, step one and two. Actually, not even at the step one, like Charles talked about, I'm at step zero. I never make the decision, truly make the decision. And then there is a type of man who is unwilling to admit that he cannot take a drink. He plans various ways of drinking, he changes his brand and his environment. There is the type who always believes that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he can take a drink without danger. And every time I picked up the booze, after being absent for a period of time, that was me. Every single time. It'll be different this time. It's never different. It always works. Then there's the manic depressive type, who is perhaps the least understood by his friends, and about whom a whole chapter can be written. And then there are types entirely normal in every respect, except in the effect alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, friendly people. And that was me. I could raise big kids, I could show up at work and build a career and do all this stuff, but when it came to this food thing, I couldn't fix it. For the first time in my life, I was beaten by somebody. And I was taught, suck it up, show up, you know, do the work, show up. Just don't let anyone see you sweat. And for the first time in my life, I couldn't fix it. And that is the phenomenon of craving. All these, and this is really an important paragraph, another one of my favorites. And many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. I cannot pick up without that craving starting, without that craving taking over. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. And that's what all of us here in this room, right? What all of us have in common. We come here because we can't fix this. We have, you know, I have an allergy to the body and an obsession of the mind. And that allergy kicks in when I eat the food and the obsession hits in between. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. That's their saying. We're never going to be cured. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Charles has been talking about that all day. The only relief is for me to put the food down. I can't be half in the food and half out of the food. I can't be overeating a little bit today, but okay tomorrow. For me personally, I can't have a little bit of sugar. I had a sponsor, I don't know if those of you remember Jesse. Mm-hmm. He was my first sponsor. And he used to have his name, Sliver of Slice, the Slab of Slab. You guys remember that? For those who know, so it's Sliver. So today is a little bit. Okay, that's the sliver. Tomorrow is a slice. Next day, a whole frickin' pie. And the next thing you know, I'm a slob again. And it's all over. This immediately precipitates us into a seething cauldron of debate. Much has been written pro and con, but among physicians, the general opinion seems to be that most chronic alcoholics are doomed. So this is telling me that if I don't put the food down and find a spiritual solution, I will die of this disease. And I never believed that. I didn't. I could read it. Okay, yay, I say it. I can tell you that. I did not believe it until this last relapse. If I don't show up and do this work, I will die. I will die in this disease. And all of us know plenty of people who have died in this disease. John said, what was the number one killer?
Of any addiction.
Of any addiction. And he's working in the addiction field, and I work in the addiction field, and I see people every single day, and we think it's the opioid crisis, and this disease kills. You know, they have studies that show that sugar lights up your brain like cocaine. Everyone's seen those, right? In the speech from Facebook or wherever. That's what it does to me. And I am doomed. I am doomed if I don't find a spiritual solution. And so I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Scott.
Wow, Stephanie, that was dope. All types of dope, girl. All types of dope. So, if I may, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. We've been talking about that all day. And it's a popular paragraph, but there's a line here right after that that I don't hear much about. This immediately precipitates us into a seething cauldron of debate. Can anybody visualize a seething cauldron of debate? What does that mean to you? Like something hot, like hot lava showering down?
Boiling
down, right? The debate is, I don't have to be 100% abstinent in order to work these steps in Overeaters Anonymous. The debate is, I can smoke a little crack and work these steps and have a psychic change. Boy, it got quiet in here. First of all, I'm the co-founder of the family afterwards, and I have these cards here. It's an OA Big Book meeting, and if anybody's, wanting a meeting on the West Coast time, it'll be 5 p.m. Monday, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. And we would definitely, you could grow there. There is service positions. We don't care who you are. We don't care if you, we want you not to be in the food, but we welcome people that are in the food. Right? We do welcome that. So getting back to this real quick, I know Stephanie touched on it. The lava shower, right, in Overeaters Anonymous is, I can do it my way. And it'll work. I don't need a higher power. And it'll work. What the hell are you doing here today, then? I'm asking that question out of love. If you could do this, let me put it on me. If I could do this myself, I would not be here. I am, Bill D, move over, because I'm sick too, every single day, and recovered. Sick and recovered every day, because I think somebody asked that question earlier. What we do have is a daily reprieve. And I'm going to show you two examples on page XXIX, right? One of the guys are Hank Parker. I think jealousy made him drink again. And that's, ain't that a thought or an emotion? Jealousy? He was jealous. He thought Bill was trying to talk to Ruth, the secretary. He thought Bill was trying to make more money in the deal and all that of the production of the Big Book. Jealousy took him out. The guy was abstinent. Maybe he was abstinent alone. The guy was abstinent, but he was in his feelings. Right? And I want to show you something here. It says, following the elimination of alcohol. It says it twice on this page. Not before. Following the elimination of crack. Following the elimination of my binge food and binge ingredients, right? There was found to be no permanent brain injury. He accepted the plan outlined in this book. Here's the promise. 1 year later, he called to see me, and I experienced a very strange sensation. I knew the man by name, and possibly recognize his features. There's a physical peace for you, for all you people that think, yeah, I lost 1 million pounds, so now I'm great. Or I'm thin, and now I'm great. No, boo-boo, you're not great. To be thin and crazy is not great. I know my friend Scott K lost 1 billion pounds, and he knew the big book in and out, and he was sick. And I can say that because I know him, he was a circuit speaker all over the place, asking people how he sound, and he was drowning himself in alcohol. That emotion and that thought again. We're all, let me not say you, I'm sick every single day. I think Steph said that. If I'm not realizing through, maybe I don't do, I don't do enough 10 steps. Right? Thank God I catch it on the 11 step review. There's a couple of questions on there that I want to drill down on. What could I have done better? If I'm not admitting that there's a sad day if I'm not admitting that I ain't do nothing wrong. Or I couldn't do nothing better. So why am I practicing 10, 11, and 12? I'm a big liar. I used to say, yeah, I'm living in 10, 11, and 12. And I ain't had no type of resentment. I ain't have no fears. I'm not human if I don't have no resentments and fears. Page 77 says ill feeling. So all my thoughts were good. I didn't get pissed off at one of the questions that was asked today. I'm going to keep it real. I'm a real dude. I'm like, yeah, they're trying to... I'm just keeping it real, right? Like, all my thoughts are not clear every single day. And that's why we have this program of action. So I could bounce it off Stephanie. You know what? Such and such. I got a resentment, such and such. Every day I have that. Now I don't have 1 million of them, but I do have it. Right? So it says, he accepted the plan outlined in this book, and the features, they couldn't recognize him. He wasn't drinking no more. He wasn't binging no more. And he accepted the plan. What's the plan in this book? It stresses the steps. It stresses continuing to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When they crop up, they will crop up. You can look on page 84, you think I'm lying. They will crop up. We ask God to remove them at once. We turn our attention, like Stephanie said, to someone else, somebody else that we can help. That's the program. That's the exception of the plan. That's the plan in this book. Here's another example. And here's another problem before we get to the next example. A long time has passed with no return to alcohol. One day at a time. A daily reprieve. Stop counting the years. Count the days and the minutes and the hours and the seconds. It's a grace period. Anyway, so when I need another mental uplift, I often think of another case brought in by a physician prominent in New York. The patient has made his own diagnosis. That's good. That's good. That's real good. That sounds ill. Deciding his situation hopeless and hidden in a deserted barn, isolation. He was rescued by a searching party in desperate condition. There go that word again. If I'm not in desperate, willingness is overrated. You could be willing to do something and never get started. It's like the third step, the three frogs on the limb. Who wants change, everybody? Who wants change? Nobody. You could be willing and don't do nothing. Right? So, look at y'all looking at me. I hear you. Alright, so he had a talk with me in which he frankly stated he thought the treatment a waste of effort. How many people here, be real, how many people here think the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous is a waste of effort? Keep it real. Be real. Because your actions are going to show it anyway. Oh, that's good. Be real. Some of y'all in here think this 12-step program in this book is a waste of time. I see it on your face. And it's good. That's good. Don't admit to me. I ain't going to put you on front street. Admit to yourself. But I see y'all in here. Right? I was the same way. So it says, unless I can assure him, see, we want proof. We want to put the cart before the horse. We want proof. People, we want to assure you. We want to assure you that he would have the willpower to resist the impulse to drink. I can't assure you that. I can't assure that willpower. You will have the willpower, because if I had that power, page 45 says, lack of power, that was our dilemma. That's our dilemma, lack of power, right? So it says, this alcoholic problem was so complex and the depression so great that we felt the only hope would be through what we call moral psychosis. There go that word again. We've seen that word in the third page in the doctor's opinion. Moral psychology is important, but a compulsive overeater that's compulsively overeating or, you know, restricting or whatever side of the spectrum you're on, you can't see that. We can't see moral psychology. It's normal for a compulsive overeater to compulsively overeat. It's normal for an exercise bulimic to go to the gym for 50 hours and eat and bulimic to throw up. It's normal, right? And we doubt if even that would help. So on the next page it says, however, he did become sold on the ideas. Notice that word again, ideas. It's in the early part of the doctor's opinion. Contained in his book. He has not had a drink for a great many years. I see him now and then. He's a fine specimen of manhood, as one could wish to be. I earnestly, this is his doctor. This is his contribution to Overeaters Anonymous and every anonymous program, right? I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through, not just the first 164 pages, the entire book. Because most of us struggle with that concept of a power greater than ourselves. If you read the stories, you'll find how many people, and maybe you could identify with one of those stories, how they found a power greater than themselves. You know, they found it through desperation. I don't think they found it through willingness. If I had $20 more, I wouldn't be here. I'm telling you, I'm keeping it real, right? So he says, though perhaps he may came to scoff, that he may laugh. A lot of us in here be laughing. All this 12-step program is bullshit, and I ain't gonna do it, right? He may remain spread. William D. Silkworth, MD. So these two characters, their lives were unmanageable. They were at ground zero. If you look at Bill, he didn't want to stop drinking. You look at page 3 where he says he went to Canada because his friend had money. And you know what's so dope about that? He was telling the story after the fact, right? He says, my generous friend had to let me go. So you know he was recovered, because if he was still drinking, he let him go. You know how I want to do it. He'd have been pissed, right? But he thanked God for his friend letting him go, because he would have never wrote this book. We wouldn't be here today studying this book. This doctor's opinion saved my life. You know, ground zero every single day. I must have the food down 100%. Ground zero every single day. And then work these steps like my hair's on fire. You know why? Because I can't keep the food down for a long time without a power source. That's why the big book talks about working these steps quickly. And that's why it talks about working with others. Because when you work with others, you're working with yourself. And you're seeing some things that you didn't pick up in the fourth step. You're seeing some things you didn't pick up in the tenth step. You're seeing some amends. You're peeling some onions. Right? You may find out that you're shopping too much. You may find out that, you know, that maybe you need to do another sex condom. You may find out that you and your coworkers beefing. You may find out that your finances is out of control. I found that out recently, and it just took 1 week, and like the world opened up. So keep peeling the onions, keep painting. And I think somebody asked me about Eddie Thatcher. He did. If you can look on YouTube, and I said this at the birthday party earlier this year. Eddie said, and he's stone cold, terrible drinker. He said, as long as I keep painting, I stay absent. So I say to you today, keep painting. keep it. The portrait can always look better. So with that, I pass. Thank you. You got it?
No, that was great. So what we're doing now is we were going to open it up for you guys to share. Oh, sorry. We were going to open it up. You guys have an assignment to think about, you know, what does entire absence mean to you? We could do the ask it that. Is there anything in the ask it basket? Because we could do Q&A first, and then we want you guys to share.
I want to share.
We want to hear from you guys.
Can they come up?
Oh. Do you want to come up and help?
Hold on. Guys, can they come up and... Or you need a waiver sign or something?
No. So, I'm sorry. Is this a question and answer?
Yeah.
Share.
We're going to do Q&A and then we'll do share.
Q&A, they ain't going to be able to share, but all right.
Okay. No,
we're
good. Yeah, all right.
We have till
then.
Let's do Q&A. All right,
cool.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Morning, I read 84 through 88. That's hard. When I do my review, I do it in the morning because I'm dead at night. I do it in the morning and I read 84 through 88 every single day because it reminds me of the importance of, you know, resentment and picking up the phone and calling someone if I'm not okay and what to do when I'm feeling uncomfortable. Okay? Now, it could be beneficial. Let me just step back for a second. My sponsor didn't have me do that until I worked through a fourth and fifth step. Okay? Because we want to really make sure that, you know, sponsors are... Steps 1 through 3 don't take very long. A week, maybe 2 weeks. If you're working with a really strong Good Book sponsor, if you're not in step 4 within like 2 to 3 weeks, you're not moving fast enough. These steps aren't going to take a year or 6 months or 3 months or 4 months. So, yeah, I'm kind of backtracking a little bit, but, you know, as I think about it, I think getting someone into step 4 as quickly as possible is the best thing that you can do for a newcomer.
That's a good answer. While it may be beneficial, in my humble opinion, I don't think the newcomer will comprehend that. And then it'll, what step are you at? Where are you? Like, if you're not at ground zero, and step 3 is like, you know what, I'm just going to go on with the rest of the steps. So, if you don't make that decision, you're over remorseful. In my humble opinion, you're over remorseful, making many resolutions, and never making a decision. So, it's nice to look at it, but stay where you're at, and work these steps like your ears on fire, like what Stephanie said. Yet, it don't have to take long. I had a sponsee that kept picking up. I said, come to Colorado. And my friend Karen, she's a witness. I said, come to Colorado. And we did the ground zero. And he's recovered. He's on fire right now, sponsoring men. And he told me he couldn't put the food down. And I showed him the ground zero. We listened to Karen M together. I was pissed, he was pissed. And we went through the steps that one day. And he's sponsoring men and women right now. On fire. So, they don't gotta take that.
Want to hold it for next one?
You talked about
God, you know, when you're in trouble, the first thing you need to get on your knees, start to pray. And the second thing is that you get to work with them. So it's 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. How do I do that working with them?
So the question is, what do you do if it's 11 o'clock at night and having a problem? How do you work with others? How do you help others? So what I was taught is after I pray, if it is too late to call someone, I can pray for that person. And that's a way of being in service to others. It's the act of thinking about somebody else. Thinking, you know, hoping for good things for somebody else. So. Any others?
I'm their home moderator and supervisor. Thank you so much. Both of you are incredible. I just like what you said, where, you know, things come up not too related, like finances, debt inventory, things are big things, and sometimes the program is not something that's talked about, it's not food, yet for me specifically, it can take me right out, and I feel sometimes with finances, the other stuff too, like I'm not being emotionally sober, I'm not being emotionally absent. Definitely working towards doing that I want. I'm willing to ask my higher power for it, but I'm so scared that it's coming to get it, that she'd be running into the food. So can you just talk a little bit about how you don't let that be that reason to go back?
So the question is how I don't let those other things be the reason that I go back to food. There's three things. Anybody want to say that? No, recover, which means utilize that step 10, because those things are going to come up. I'm going to make mistakes. I can clean them up with the process of 4 through 9, and if I have to make amends, or, you know, I'll make them quickly and then turn resolutely look for somebody else that I can help.
Any other questions? Thank you so much for sharing that. It tells us in the big book, Bill W. worked the steps within days. He did. I can also tell you my experience is I work the steps every year. I've done multiple 4 steps. The first 4 step may not have been drilled down as deeply as my last 4 step. Every time I drill down the like Charles said, the onion is peeled to a deeper level. I just finished working through the steps again. So it's not a one-time thing. We're going to be doing this. I'm going to be doing this continuously over and over for the rest of my life. It doesn't have to be perfect. Okay?
time too.
I want to address the rest of the big world. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commit to this way of living as we clean up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter, to your point. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So, yeah, we're not going to get it right on the first take, but I think, as Stephanie was saying, Bill made so many references to at once, practical application at once. Bill D in a vision for you. No, Dr. Bob on page 156 in a vision for you said, one day I took the bulls by the horns, went around, came home at midnight tired. Wonder what he was doing. He was working the steps quickly. You know, and we have to continue to do this on a daily basis. It should continue for a lifetime.
The day I call someone, I go to God first, and then I call someone and say, I'm really resentful, and I work through it. And then I do my nightly review, and I still work through the steps, and I still have stuff on my fourth step. Because for me, it's a matter of continuing to dig deeper and dig deeper. You know, peeling an onion back even farther, which is painful. You know, you peel an onion, you cry, right? It makes you cry. Every time I peel an onion, it's like, whoa. I get to another level.
Life is so hard, that's why we do it quick. A vision person, one of my good friends from Boston, says, man, I can't sit in this poo-poo diaper all day, all week, all year, or, you know what I mean? I gotta dispose of this poo-poo diaper as quick as possible. I mean, how long am I gonna sit in this poo-poo diaper?
I do my night interview in the morning, so if I sit the interview and night interview, I apologize. Like I said, at the end of the day, I am so tired, so I do it the first thing in the morning. Where there does seem to be confusion is the difference between a 10th step and an 11th step, and I just want to clarify what it says in the big book. And I don't know, maybe it's, you know, I think you read it. You read what it says. Let's see, let me go back in here. And we'll look at this, because I hear this all the time. And it's funny, because I work in treatment, and even in my treatment center, it's off. So, it does on PJ4, this thought brings us to step 10. Okay, so this is a step 10 is an immediately addressing the resentment. You know, look at those mistakes immediately. And I think you just read it, so I don't want to read it again. So step 10 is a spot on the spot inventory. Okay? What I was taught, I pray first. If I'm still resentful after praying, because it says right here, it says, continue to watch for the selfishness and thoughts of resentment and fear. When these crop up, weigh in God at once. So I go to God first. I ask God to remove this resentment or whatever it is that's bothering me, this disruption. And if it's not removed, then I pick up the phone and I work the columns immediately with someone on the phone. An 11th step is that nightly review, the end of the day. Like I said, for me, I do it in the morning. But it's at the end of the day, where was I selfish, dishonest, resentful, or afraid? Okay? I'm looking through my day, and I'm really inventorying it, and I do that on paper, and then I read it to my sponsor. Okay, so that's the difference between 10 and 11. The other part of 11 is the daily prayer and meditation. So, hopefully, did that miss anything in that? Okay. Because I hear that all the time. I'm like, well, I did my nightly 10 step. And I'm like, well, no, it's a 10 step is a spot. If you've got a resentment and you're waiting till the end of the day to address it, good luck. So.
So the question is, how many days should a sponsee be abstinent in order to work the steps? I kind of reorganized the question, my bad. So, in the doc's opinion, actually, Bill didn't take long. He was off the alcohol, and Abby came in after 3 days. Bill D. It says on the third day he turned his life over to him, and then started working on him. 2 to 3 days, and, you know, 48 hours. You know, as suggested in Big Book, it's not me. Big Book says, you know, if your mind is not clear, then we can't work. You know, and again, what type of work are you doing with somebody that's still eating? No judgment free, but if you're still eating, that's fine. But we can't do anything because I can't smoke a little crack and can't get a spiritual awakening while putting that ingredient in my body. So, you know, 48 hours.
So what do you do? And you said your sponsee is the same way to use.
So the question is, what do I do if my sponsee is continuing to use?
Because I do hear, like, you know where they are, all of this. So I'm sure there's many answers to that too, but yeah.
So there is many answers to that. You don't fire them, but you allow them to have their ground zero experience. That's what I do. After a few times, I allow them to have their ground zero experience. Because I don't want to hinder anybody from having their ground zero experience. I think you had a hand up and then we're going to...
Can I address that one too, just real quick? I do it a little differently. When I start working with someone, I make sure they've got their food plan, and I ask them to go to a nutritionist, because that's in my experience. For the first time someone had me go to a nutritionist, so I have a food plan to give it to me, so I ask them to do that. I let them know up front, once we get the food plan and we get going, you know, I can work with you as long as you stay abstinent. If you break your abstinence 3 times, then I'm not going to be able to take you through the steps. I'm not going to be able to work with you anymore. And that's how I do it. And some of you are shaking your head going, it's militant. Doesn't mean I turn my back on them. I still talk to them. I'm just not going to take them through the steps. And I let them know that up front. And I was talking to someone else at lunch. I have 6 questions. When someone asks me to sponsor them, I have 6 questions I ask them to meditate, think about, reflect on. And then I ask them to call me back in a day or two and then, you know, let me know if you're willing to do this. And, you know, oftentimes people will answer the 6 questions and say, you know what, I'm not ready. Or sometimes they say they will, and then we'll get started. And then we'll start reading the book together. And we'll have 3 or 4 days a week where we read. We get to the doctor's opinion. We get through really steps 1, 2, and 3. And I try and do that within like a week and a half to 2 weeks, tops. And then I get them in their 4th step. And they start doing the work. So that's how I do it.
She's a drill sergeant. She's like real tough.
Mm-hmm. She's a big guy and very clean and very scared and not very clean.
So could you give me a question?
I'm afraid to put my question.
All right, so the question on the floor is, should I find somebody else? And I don't know if I said this, but if you're desperate, Google can respond to you and you will recover. What do I mean by that? The sponsor is not responsible for you being recovered. Make sense? I mean, if there's something going on that you guys are not a good fit, maybe you should try to look for somebody else. But if you find yourself looking all the time for a lot of people, right? You said that you had a bunch of sponsors. Chances are it's not a bunch of sponsors' fault. That's my answer. I don't know.
The only thing that I would add to that is I've had quite a few sponsors in my early career. To all the sponsors, I'm so sorry. If my sponsor isn't able to take me through steps and doesn't have time, you know, I set specific times for sponsors. I talk to many sponsors daily, and then we set up time for the work. If my sponsor doesn't have time for me, I need a sponsor who can commit to time with me, because I can't take myself through the steps.
So I don't know if that helps.
There was a lady over on this side that was next.
I'm sure you did this too, so you can jump in. So the doctor's opinion is step one, the story is step one, the solution is step one, alcohol is step one, there's a lot of, I'm so glad this came up because there's a reason there's this many chapters to go to step one. Why do you think that is? That's the only step we have to do perfectly, right? And then we get into, we acknowledge this step two, and then we get into step three and four, and how it works. Did I skip anything?
No, you didn't.
Okay. Someone took the time to read the book with me, teach me the book, and read it with me, and I felt that was meaningful to me, and every time I take someone through it, read the book with them, my recovery gets stronger too.
I just want to add something real quick. Ground zero, the doctor's opinion to me is ground zero and step one, and then Bill's story, there's a solution, and more about alcoholism is step one. So step one is 34% of the first 164 pages. Step 12 is 41% of the first 164 pages. So those two steps are key. All the steps are key, but just wanted to throw that figure out there.
Okay, so now I want to open up to you guys coming up and sharing about what entire abstinence means to you. You can come up to the...
Can you make a line that way?
Yeah, make a line and come up to the podium and we'll get this mic up here.
We
want to hear from you guys.
I'm Roberta, recovered compulsive
overeater.
Thank you both so much. I thought this was going
to be... I might have turned it off.
Okay. So I thought this was going to be more of a debate. I came into the program 38 years ago, and the doctor's opinion really irritates me and has been all these years. And I thought, okay, now I'm going to finally see how I can incorporate it. For myself, I have had a psychic change because of this program. I no longer see things the way I used to. And I can eat anything and don't have an allergy to a particular substance anymore. I did relate to the quantity. When I get too much, too full, that will set me off. So I have to be careful about that. I feel like once I got a personal God, God is protecting me, and the obsession was removed, is removed 99% of the time. Occasionally it comes back, and I choose wrong foods, dangerous foods, and it could be for 10 minutes, or it can be for an hour or two, but then sanity returns. And so, yeah, a lot of times I try to pray or work with others to not go to the food, but this can be as good as it gets, my sponsor says to me. And I kind of have that mindset. She's been abstinent over 40 years. I've been abstinent 16 years, very grateful, had a lot of relapse before, maintaining 100-pound weight loss, but the idea of entire abstinence, to me, is just that failing forward, loving myself, getting back to sanity, and living happy, joyous, and free. I admire the idea of, you know, I don't eat no matter what, but that is not my experience. So I just want to put it out there that, you know, I wish we were a larger part of our way. I know other people do eat anything and kind of have my experience, but I always feel like a little bit of a stepchild, or, you know, I'm not in the no sugar, no flour, entire abstinence mantra. So just want to share my point of view. Thank you.
That's it.
Well, let me ask this. How many people would like to read but don't feel like coming up to the podium?
We'll just assume read something from their seat. Anybody?
Okay.
All right.
I'm Jai, compulsive overeater from England. And I've been crying through this whole thing. And I'm super emotional. Just like 30 days of hospice. So, yeah, I'm 58 pounds. I've thrown out my 3,000 a day, $200. I buy 6 huge bags. Candy down with ice cream and throw up about 100 times a day. I've almost died numerous times, so that's kind of my thing. At one point, I did have a year of abstinence where I ate anything, and my bottom line abstinence was I just didn't throw up through what. And that's what I did, and right now, what I'm doing is I work with a registered dietitian, and I have to pick up some treatments so I can stop throwing up. And it's a miracle, even like here, Mary's watching me right now, and I didn't say that's my food plan, but I have a specific food plan that's 3 meals and 1 snack at night. And after my snack at night, every night, I want to eat more. And I do want food. And, except for one day, I had like a hard piece of bread. Basically, I go upstairs and I put on my meditation music and I pray and I just ask God for help. And what I find is that within, really quick, it's like within like 10 minutes, I'm able to calm down my voice in my head and I felt relief. And I think part of that is it takes my body about 20 minutes to register those cues. And I also believe that my God is so big that he's helping me. But I have no idea where all these feelings are coming from today. Except for I broke up with my boyfriend a month ago and he's down to eat. But I don't know, just all of these, the more obstinate, the more raw I feel. And the cleaner my food is, the more raw I feel. And so my food has been very, very, what I eat is really healthy right now, because I can't dabble in any sugar. My thing was frozen yogurt. I love that. I'm like obstinate. And I just can't do it because it triggers me eating balanced ice cream. It's too close or even popcorn. It just, you know, because I can have 10 bags and it's only 1,000 calories, you know? That's going to be where I am. I just can never get enough. And there's this empty hole inside that I'm always trying to fill with food. So I'm grateful for my recovery.
Slow reader. Hey. So I did the writing at lunch, and I don't know, I found this very, very helpful. On the this view, there's a special edition that goes over the doctor's edition, or the doctor's opinion. And that was the first time I think I've ever related the doctor's opinion to me, and that's right when I saw the name of this workshop. I think Long Beach. So I was like, I gotta get my butt there, because I struggle with what I'm allergic to. And I mean, I think I figured it out as I'm sitting here writing. So I say, if I believe that I have an allergy to the body and an illness to the mind, I need to determine what it is I'm allergic to. So if I abstain from that which I'm allergic to, therefore I won't eat compulsively. And I don't know if that's true. There's kind of a question mark there. So if I abstain from that which I'm allergic, there's going to be no trigger to start craving. So I thought about my red light foods, which are candy, cookies, donuts, pies, cakes, and basically then I went into high sugar foods, you know. But I was saving sugar and white flour before, and this is what I've noticed. I have a really bad knee, I have a bad back, and I have a lot of inflammation in my body. And within 7 days of no white sugar or white flour, my knee shrunk. I mean, my boss couldn't believe it. It just, like, all the inflammation went away. And so, did that tell me I'm allergic to it? I don't know. You know, it tells me that my body gets better, but I'm like, really, you know, am I trying to convince myself? I don't know. So, you know, I kind of sit there and I look at all that, and but I keep trying to do no sugar, no white flour, and I keep relapsing over and over and over and over again. In fact, my sponsor is now looking at me like, I don't know how to help you. You know what I mean? So, I don't know where that leaves me, but I do believe that in one thing, and that's not good enough. You know, I'm going to keep coming back no matter what it takes, for as long as it takes. I've recovered in another 12-step program, and I know that, you know, you fail when you stop coming. So, I guess that would be a question I have, is what would you tell somebody who continues to relapse on the no sugar white flour? Do you have any comments on it?
You just told my story. That's my story. I just continued to relapse. Had periods of abstinence. And I had to hit it off. And I wish there was something else I could suggest. I don't know if I mentioned this in my story. I never stopped coming. I've come continuously to OA for 14 years. I'm here whether I'm eating or not. I'm working, you know, trying to work with a sponsor whether I'm eating or not. Doesn't work so well when I'm eating. But I keep coming back. And that would be what I would suggest. Just keep coming back. I wish I could fabricate. I tried hard, you know, this is my body, this is my bottom. But until I had my bottom, I couldn't stop. And I can tell you I'm free of the obsession today. But I know how painful it is.
It is.
It's the worst. It's like this weird little world of I'm asking for 2 or 3 days, I need again. I'm asking for a week, I need again.
I just want to add to that, and that's good that you keep coming. I think an overeater is anonymous. We hide behind that sugar and a white flour. I think that's so vague. I think we need to get real. Like, I think Laura C said something that was quite interesting. Do you binge on Domino's pure sugar? No. Do you binge on white flour? I mean, now, whatever that white flour is, gold medal white flour, you know. But you may binge on a combination of sugar, white flour, and something like 10% fat. So if you can get to the nitty gritty, to the ingredients, because sugar and white flour is just so vague, and it's an umbrella that kills the compulsive overeater.
Thank you.
Abstinence for me is constantly growing and constantly changing. When I first came to OA, it was about how many meals I eat and how many snacks there were. What that did for me at the time was allow me to put my fork down, because otherwise I was just eating all the time. And then I also knew intuitively that I could not have the combination of sugar and flour. So for many months, maybe years, I don't recall, it was no sugar flour combined. And then to that
I had to add chocolate, ice cream, peanut butter, and at some point, it was just my ability to constantly be willing to be honest with myself that helped me the most. My abstinence today is different. It is no sugar, no wheat, and nothing that looks like bread. No nut butters. No dry food. Yeah, I think that's it. But again, and I have to tell the story that originally it was no peanut butter. And just this past year, I have become vegan for health reasons. And I thought I could eat cashew butter. And I learned the hard way, because it started beautifully, because I could have cashew butter on my rice cake and one tablespoon, and then one tablespoon led to two tablespoons, then it led to two tablespoons twice a day. And when I wound up with the jar and a knife, I said, this needs to go on my abstinence list. Because that's what it is. It's just being honest. Being honest with myself. Thank you.
Thank you both for your service. It, for me, is a lot more, like, entire abstinence is a lot more complicated. I can't cut out food groups because of the history of starving myself for such a basic age of 13 to 19, just starving myself. And so entire abstinence, my bottom line abstinence is no purging of growing up. But I'm also a body assessor and an exercise bulimic. And I'm right now at 5 weeks no exercise because I threw my back out at the gym. And now I have bad effects, so I can't do anything but walk. And it sucks. A lot. But that's as a result of me not listening to my body and not listening to being in constant pain and thinking, you know, the disorder that, you know, for the compulsive eater and for me when I get that craving of I want this food, it's the same thing at the gym that's like, no, I gotta do these heavy squats. No, I gotta, like, my head will be like, maybe you just put, add 5 pounds. No, I gotta add 10. Like, I gotta lift more than I lifted last week. And so my entire abstinence looks like not purging, not binging, staying out of the damn mirror, because I noticed for me, when I'm texting my sponsor, oh, I like how my body's looking, she's like, you know, what if your body changes? And it doesn't look like it looks like today. I'm experiencing that now. So my body's changing from, you know, bodybuilding at the gym. And so right now, entire abstinence looks like, how can I feel sane? That was the question I was really asking myself. Because it's not just like, I mean, I literally, I'm orange. I like overeat carrots all the time. So it's like cutting out sugar. That's fine. I'll just eat sweet potatoes. Like, you know, like, there's so many ways for my addict mind to find ways to not be sane. So entire abstinence for me really has me sitting down and writing, like, what are the parameters I need in order to feel sane around food? And they're like basic things, like sit at the table when you're eating. And, you know, don't eat standing up out of the fridge. And thank God that's been lifted. Because I used to be like, oh, I'm going to make my healthy meal prep. And when it's done, I literally have only one day. It's supposed to be a week's worth of food. And I've eaten, you know, 6 days of that week's worth of food. And I'm like, some vegetables. And so it looks like sitting down and eating. It looks like, you know, listening to my body. looks like not getting lost in the mirror. It looks like not trying on clothing from high school. Maybe at one point I will not hold on to that clothing, but that's not where we're at right now. And it also looks like, not compulsively eating, not going back for a second or third plate. At the same time, with injured anorexia, I have to say, if I'm going for a second plate, is it possible that my first plate was a restrictive plate? And it damn well usually is. And it also looks like showing up, going to meetings, looks like working with staff every single day, looks like outreach. For me, abstinence and, entire abstinence doesn't look like just not growing up, because there's been tons of times in my life where I'm not growing up, but I'm acting insane. Thanks.
Okay. Eleanor,
no, come on.
Step up.
My story is very much like yours, and I want to stop before you put that on. And I've got 8 days today. And the bottom line is committed, because I have to know, am I quote unquote drinking or not? And if I'm eating something that I didn't commit, it's clear I'm drinking, because it might hurt my essence to be committed. But I wanted to say what happened 8 days ago that stopped me, because I've heard several people talk about that. But I think like 1 day, 2 days, a week, and whatever. And I was actually at another workshop last weekend, and this woman said to me, today can be the worst day. Like, this can be as bad as it ever gets. And for some reason, that just clicked with me. Like, if I just hung on, it's only going to get better. And I stayed abstinent that night, and that's going to be abstinent for these last 8 days. Just like that's what you do. Today can be the worst day. Today can be the worst day if you just hang on.
We apologize, but at this point we had technical difficulties with the recorder, so this is all we have. We hope you enjoyed this.